Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Do you wish you knew the saints better? Overwhelmed with all the events in Catholic history and just wish you could tie it all together? It's tough work, and even scientists have determined that it takes approximately 400 repetitions to create a new synapse in the brain. Unless it is done with play, in which case it takes between 10 and 20 repetitions. Introducing Saint Cards, where the facts about saints and history are presented in fun and engaging games for ages 4 to 104. Check out Saint Cards at saintcards.com and begin the fun for your family, school, and parish today.
Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
What are you doing this Lent? The St. Paul Center is streaming their newest video Bible study for free starting Ash Wednesday. Based on Scott Hahn's renowned covenantal theology, this is a study no one should miss. Invite your friends, Catholic or not. Don't miss your chance to see this premium study for free. Go to stpaulcenter.com to sign up today.
By definition, a storyteller conveys events in words, images, and sounds, often by improvisation or embellishment. The Living Bread Radio Network presents The Storytellers with Tony Agnese. Today, you'll hear a faith-based, inspirational story that's both heartfelt and heartwarming. And now, let's meet today's storyteller with Tony Agnese.
Hi, this is Tony Agnese, and welcome to The Storytellers. Each week on the show, we're going to feature a guest who has a story to tell and oftentimes have books and, in today's instance, a new movie to talk about as well. Abby Johnson is my guest. She's an American anti-abortion activist. She previously worked at Planned Parenthood as a clinical director, but had an experience that caused her to resign and join the pro-life movement. And she has a book called Unplanned and a movie called Unplanned about her life that's coming out here at the end of March. Abby, thank you so much for joining us. It's great to have you with us.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me on.
Abby, let's talk a little bit about your younger life growing up. Your family was fairly religious, pro-life, right? How did that all come about that you would end up at Planned Parenthood?
My parents, I remember, we didn't have a lot of conversations about abortion, but I do remember any time it came up, my parents would say, oh, well, abortion, we're pro-life. My parents were not pro-activists in any way, shape, or form. We didn't sit around the dinner table and talk about, what it was to be pro-life. I didn't know any of the arguments. So I think I was just very naive, very ignorant about either. And essentially recruit to work for nation. And when she gave me talking points, parents are very ignorant. to the fact, and very naive, very ignorant.
You were doing a cause that was worthwhile. Was there a defining moment that you realized that maybe that wasn't necessarily true?
Yeah, 2009 had sort of, it's been sort of a year of luck for me. You know, up until 2009, things had been, you know, pretty normal. I've been running the clinic, you know, really enjoying my job, loving my job and what I was doing. 2009, though, I was getting higher and higher up in management. I was sitting on different committees for the National Abortion Federation. I was participating in these, you know, confidential Planned Parenthood groups at the national level. And I just started to see some stuff where I thought, what in the world is going on? I mean, I really believed that we were there to be a charitable organization to help women receive health care. All of a sudden, I'm just sort of slapped in the face with this constant talk of money. No concern at all, actually, for the health care of these women. Then was told that we were all being required to double our abortion count. Our quota, the certain number of abortions we had to sell. And I just thought, what is happening? I mean, at the time, I thought, okay, you know, surely the organization is just changing. Like, something's happening within the organization. When I look back, though, at that time, I realized that it had always been that way. I just had not been in high enough management to really see the day-to-day operation until that last year. And so that has really softened my heart for the care of these women and the way that that we were treating them. But then ultimately I left after witnessing a live ultrasound-guided abortion procedure and saw a 13-week-old unborn baby fight and struggle for his life against the abortion instrument. And that was really the first time where I had actually considered the humanity of these children that we were destroying. And I just knew that I was really on the wrong side of this debate. And so I ended up leaving Planned Parenthood and started, you know, talking about my story and really trying to help others find healing as well who has been touched by abortion in some way.
Now, that particular ultrasound-guided abortion was kind of the defining moment for you. It kind of begs the question, if that had never happened, was the body of evidence that you were acquiring in 2009 strong enough that at some point you would have still made this decision, or was that the tipping point and it needed to happen in order for you to see it?
Yeah, I think that maybe had to happen because, you know, the other things, I had become pretty good at justifying what we were doing and making it okay in my head. So I think it would have taken some sort of grand gesture from God to get me to really see what was happening. You don't know. If it hadn't been that, there could have been something else, you know, that could have taken place that would have caused me to leave. But, you know, I was in line for a big promotion, had been promised this big promotion, and, you know, that came with a big raise, and it was a big honor. And, you know, when you start, I made a lot of money anyway as the clinic director, but, you know, it's pretty amazing what people are willing to justify for money.
Yeah.
And so I think if I hadn't have had that moment, I think that it would have been easier for me to justify what was going on.
With the event that led up to your departure, what was Planned Parenthood's reaction to your resigning?
They took me to court. They tried to get a permanent gag order against me so that I wouldn't be able to share my story. And I don't know, I guess they think it's illegal to become pro life or something, but it's not. So they lost in court, and you know, now I'm free to share my story everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Following your departure, there was a lot of media interest in your story, and you know, you began to be asked to be on different news broadcasts and Fox News and so forth. Did that catch you by surprise that there was such a such an interest in your story? Were you prepared to even to go there?
No, I was definitely surprised. I mean, because for me, I'm like, okay, so what? Like, I left my job. Big deal. I had never planned on speaking publicly about my experiences. I'd never planned on talking about what I had witnessed inside the clinic or anything like that. I mean, I had gotten a job offer for another job. So I thought, well, I'm just going to go do this job and sort of slink away and pretend like that 8 years never happened and go back to normal life. But when they sued me, that's when the AP picked up on the story. And that's when I started getting all of these media calls, which was very surprising for me.
What then triggered you to say, I need to get this in writing, I need to write a book, I need to pull all of these the stories together into a book?
Well, I had a bunch of publishers coming to me and asking me to write a book, and initially I said no, I was just not interested. I don't love writing, so I just thought, no, I don't really want to do that. But the more I was asked, the more I started to really think about it and pray about it. And I thought, you know, what if there is, you know, one person who works in a clinic that reads a book that I wrote, you know, and maybe they read it as a critic to tell people what a liar I am or whatever it is. But what if they find truth in it and they leave? You know, what if a woman reads this book and she sees my experience and reads about, you know, this baby fighting for its life? Maybe she'll choose life. You know, maybe a baby will be saved. And so the more I kept thinking about it, I thought, I think it's worth it to go ahead and get this story out there. And hopefully it'll help people heal from past decisions. Hopefully it will help through God's grace, bring about conversion, and who knows, it may even save a baby. So that's really why I decided to go ahead and write it.
And you had mentioned other workers in the abortion industry that have left. I know you started a ministry called And Then There Were None. How surprised were you, or were you surprised at all, that there were other people coming forward that had similar experiences or experiences enough to make them want to exit the industry? And what caused you then to say, I need to, you know, put together some assistance for others who are transitioning out?
Yeah, so when the book was released, I started getting emails from people who worked in abortion clinics, and they were telling me that they had read the book and that, you know, they had decided that they wanted to leave their jobs too. And, you know, could I help them? Well, I thought, you know, well, of course, and I really thought that, I thought surely after, you know, 40 years of fighting legalized abortion, there's some sort of organization out there who is helping people leave the abortion industry. I mean, we had ministries for everything under the sun in the pro-life movement, and I realized that there wasn't. There was nothing out there to help clinic workers. And I just thought, you know, I really believe that these, if presented with support, if presented with a way out, I felt like more people would leave the clinic if they just knew that this help was available. And we thought, you know, because we recognize that it's, you know, it's a hard sell to convince somebody who works in a clinic to leave their job and trust the pro-life movement to help. So we, you know, we thought, oh, well, yeah, I mean, maybe we'll get 10 workers out a year. You know, we thought that would be big success, but, you know, now here we are a few years later, and we've helped almost 500 workers leave their jobs. And it's been really beautiful just to watch not only the ministry flourish, but to really just see the transformation in the men and women who have come through our group.
My guest on The Storytellers is Abby Johnson. Abby is an American anti-abortion activist who previously was a clinical director at Planned Parenthood. And her story is fascinating, so fascinating that she's written a couple of books, and there is a movie due out at the end of March called Unplanned, which is based upon Abby's best-selling book. We're going to return, and we're going to talk more with our guest, Abby Johnson, here on The Storytellers.
Support for The Storytellers is provided by CatholicBook.net, serving the Catholic community for 30 years with books, Bibles, gifts, and more. CatholicBook.net is safe, secure, and simple to use. Just a few clicks and your purchase is delivered right to your door. CatholicBook.net, for 30 years, a commitment to service.
Welcome back to The Storytellers. This is Tony Agnese. My guest is Abby Johnson. We're talking about her book, Unplanned, and the brand new movie that will be coming out at the end of March that explains Abby's story. Abby, you've got to be pretty excited about this movie coming out.
Yeah, it is. It's really exciting. It's a lot of preparation, sort of building up to the release, keeping me busy. But yeah, it's very exciting.
Did you have a part in it? Did you consult with Ashley, who plays you in the film?
Yeah, I did. Once she was cast, I had final approval of the screenplay, of the actual script, and then was on set quite a bit while they were filming, and had been very involved with the editing and production process. But yeah, once Ashley was cast, we had a lot of, we talked pretty much every day, just trying to help her understand the role and understand my personality and, you know, and things like that.
How well did she capture you in this, do you think?
Very well. Mm-hmm. Very well. Yeah, it's, we have sort of similar personalities anyway, mm-hmm. By nature. So she did a really phenomenal job.
So the movie is coming out here at the end of March, right?
Yeah, March 29th is the release date.
And obviously it's completed and everything is ready to go. I know that there is a couple of theaters. I know that the Regal Cinema in Greene has the movie slated, and that there are a couple of other theaters in the area here targeted, Cinemark on the Strip and Regal in Massillon. So for you people who live in those areas, you might want to make a phone call and tell them you're interested so that that happens. And I know you're offering the movie to pregnancy centers and other organizations that might get involved and want to do a private screening or do a screening where they can get a sponsor to cover the cost and make some money for the centers as well. Is that part of are you involved in that part of it, or can you give me a little bit of background on that?
Well, I can tell you how it's done. I'm not really a part of that. But basically, if a group, it could be a group of individuals, it could be an organization, it could be a church, a school, whoever, if they want to, it's basically a theater screen buyout. So you pay up front for the ticket to a screening, and then you sell the tickets to your people, whoever you want to go there, and then you basically own that screening. You own that theater screen for generally 30 minutes before and 30 minutes after the film.
Mm-hmm.
So you could do a discussion after the film. You could have, you know, let's say if a pregnancy center wanted to do it, they could have post-abortion help available, put their resources out and available. So you can pass a popcorn bucket around and take up a, you know, a donation collection for a nonprofit. You can sort of operate it however mm-hmm. you want to.
I was very interested to see, or it was interesting to me to see that the movie's rated R. Can you talk a little bit about the R rating that the movie Unplanned has received?
Yeah, it was, I think it was a little unexpected. I mean, my family, they're Marvel comic movie fans, and all those are PG for the most, PG-13, and I had, you know, had seen some of those, and I thought, well, gosh, you know, by the end of those films, I mean, everybody's been blown up, everybody's dead, there's, you know, nudity in some of them, there's sort of gratuitous profanity, and I thought, you know, surely we wouldn't get a more stringent rating than a PG-13, because I mean, I've seen PG-13 films. I see what's in them.
Mm-hmm.
So it was interesting when it came back with an R rating, but sort of seems like the MPAA kind of stumbled backwards into the truth.
Yes.
You know, stating that abortion is violent, that it is disturbing, and they're absolutely right. It is.
So
and,
the,
you know, on the other hand, I don't think it's a bad idea for parents to, I think every teenager should be watching this film, and I don't think it's a bad idea for their parent to go with them
mm-hmm.
so that they can have an in-depth conversation about this with their kids, answer questions that their children may have. I think that is an important part of this. So part of, you know, education and really educating our kids. So, we're fine with it. They told us, you know, you can take out some things in order to get a PG-13 rating, and we were not willing to water down the message or the content. So.
You mentioned that the ratings council kind of backed into it, essentially an admission, if you will, that abortion is violent, that it is disturbing, that and all of these things that would cause it to get an R rating. It's almost as if it's intended to be that way. But you say in the screening that it's appropriate not only for teens, but teens and parents to go together. And I think that would be a great way to see the movie. I just read recently in the last day or two that the number one cause of death in America is abortion. Are you familiar with that statistic? More than heart disease or cancer or any of them.
Yeah, in fact, more than any of those combined.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, abortion kills more. So, yeah.
So you become an anti-abortion speaker and activist, and obviously you're out there. With the polarization that exists, you've obviously have had some negative things happen, as well as the positive things and the support that you get from the pro-life people. How is that on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis? How do you deal with the hate, if I could use that word?
You know, I honestly, it really doesn't bother me. I think God sort of shaped my personality from an early age so that I could handle that and handle it easily. I don't know. It just doesn't really bother me. I mean, I know who I am I know who God says I am. I know who my family says I am. And that's really all that matters to me. I mean, I'm always happy to share truth and to share facts with those who are on the other side of this debate, or even those inside of our own movement who would choose to not be charitable or kind. Mm. But I don't know. I don't have a better answer than that.
Have you ever been fearful, afraid for yourself or your family in any way?
The only time that I have ever been afraid was when I actually worked at Planned Parenthood and I started getting death threats from people who didn't like abortion.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only time I've actually been afraid for my family. But there was also sort of a heightened sense of fear that is instilled in you when you work at the clinic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to make you really, really fearful, probably more fearful than you should be. But, you know, now that I'm working on this side, I feel like as long as I'm walking in God's will, I mean, he's going to keep my family protected. And so it's just not something that I worry about.
So it would be fair to say that your own faith journey has intensified during all of this since 2009?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I didn't have much faith background going on whenever I was working at the clinic. So, yeah, definitely all of that has changed since I've left.
As a male, I have a trouble with associating pro-abortion with this kind of feminism that seems to me to be based in a lot of untruths. How do you deal with this kind of feminism, and what is the true vision you have of what it means to be a feminist?
Well, the first feminists were very pro-life and really believed that it was anti-woman to separate a woman from her child, even a child in the womb, because our biological nature is part of who we innately are.
Mm-hmm.
And we are innately, just by nature, called to reproduce, to be mothers. And so they believe that it was really the anti-feminist thing to do to deny scientific truth,
mm-hmm,
that women are to be life givers. And, you know, now we live in times, second wave feminists really changed that and expanded that to mean sort of this argument of bodily autonomy,
yeah,
the separation of mother and child in the womb. And, you know, and now we're, you know, we get third and fourth wave feminism, and it's like, oh, you know, you can be a woman but be a man, and we have all this androgyny and
so much of it,
genderism, and
yeah,
people don't even live out their biological truth anymore.
Abby, I wish we could continue. We're out of time. I can't believe how quickly this has gone by. Thank you so much for joining us, and God bless you and for the courage that you have to continue to talk and to write and to best of luck with the film. I'm excited to see the movie Unplanned here at the end of March, and I've already read the book and so forth. So very, very pleased that we could get you on and that you would join us today on the show. Thank you so much, Abby. God bless you.
Thank you so much. You too.
And that's our show for today. This is Tony Agnese, and you can join us again on The Storytellers every week on Tuesday at 2, repeating at Sunday at 9 a.m. We're also podcast immediately following the show, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Spotify. That's our show for today. God bless you. See you next time on The Storytellers.
We hope hope you've enjoyed today's edition of The Storytellers with Tony Agnese, a production of the Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio. To learn more about today's storyteller, go to thestorytellersradio.com. There you can subscribe to the podcast and hear all of our past shows. And join us again next week at this same time for The Storytellers with Tony Agnese.
BreadBox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.
CMF Curo is the country's first Catholic healthcare ministry to provide an affordable health sharing solution rooted in Catholic teaching and community. Learn more at mycatholichealthcare.com/podcast. That's mycatholichealthcare.com/podcast.